strict adherence to the standing orders. And I would like to believe, Mr. Speaker, you having pointed out what the standing orders reveal, and having pointed out what the standing orders reveal, I still saw clear and flagrant breaches of these very orders. However, the very same persons who, in the eyes of the public, breached those standing orders, showing an inability to obey the laws of this Honorable House, yet still expect the entire public to believe that in silence and in secret, they obey the laws of the land. Mr. Speaker, for the last time, I hope, I hear a certain clamoring, which again, Mr. Speaker, appears to be in contravention, and I hope I need not quote Standing Orders 34 and Standing Orders 40 of this Honorable House whilst I make my presentation. Mr. Speaker, when I rise in this Honorable House, I rise on behalf of the people of Frizzell and Saltzbus, Mr. Speaker, a proud and honest people who I am eternally grateful and thankful for the support that they gave to me as a member of the St. Lucie Labour Party on the 28th day of November 2011. Mr. Speaker, on that day, these proud people in Frizzell and Saltzbus, along with this nation, took a stand against largesse. They took a stand against lavish spending. They took a stand, Mr. Speaker, against those who chose to pay third world and to plaster their faces on vehicles rather than to plaster the homes of those whose houses remained in a state of disrepair post-Hurricane Humphrey. Mr. Speaker, the people of Frizzell and Saltzbus voted for an honest, hard-working, thinking, and prudent government, one which will provide this beautiful country and guide this beautiful country out of the clutches of despair and onto a path of economic and social recovery. In their name, Mr. Speaker, and for the purposes of the record, I declare my full support for the appropriation bill as presented by our esteemed leader, Prime Minister and Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, having listened to the debate in this House, at times I wonder, what happens when persons stand in this House and confidently read things out to the people of this country? Because I heard the Honorable Minister of Finance refer to a quote from Hansard with respect to admissions made by the now leader of the opposition when he sat in the position of Minister of Finance. And I ask questions because I want to know, and it's important, that when certain statements are made, which clearly appear to be erroneous, you have to ask whether the Honorable Member, as he then was either duped by someone or some group of persons, and if that is true, then we should be under some duty to disclose who those imposters posing as advisors to the Prime Minister are. But then, Mr. Speaker, on the other hand, if the member for Castries North was neither duped or misled, then it presents this nation with a picture of something more sinister for their consideration. Mr. Speaker, during this debate I was heartened, and I'm not very often heartened by much which comes from the member of Castries Southeast. However, I was heartened to hear him ask the nation through his reference to Scripture, judge a man by his words and deeds. Because as I listened to our Minister of Finance introduce his review of the domestic economy by referring to the budget presentation of April 14, 2011, of the now leader of the opposition in his capacity as Minister of Finance. And as the Minister of Finance so eloquently quoted the words of this honorable member, I too was drawn into reflections on the teachings of the Bible. Mr. Speaker, I'm informed and verily believe that both members of the other side of this political divide are very familiar, or rather ought to be very familiar, with biblical teaching. More specifically, and as was alluded to my colleague, the ninth commandment of our Lord and Savior, which in modern parlance is, thou shalt not lie. Mr. Speaker, you're clamoring in the wind again. Mr. Speaker, I recall listening to that very budget presentation and heard the public declaration of 4.4% economic growth. Mr. Speaker, I was so shocked. I was shocked by this revelation, which I could only assume to be factual because it is a declaration made by a member of this honorable house. The only conclusion that I could draw, having heard this, was that St. Lucia, wow, was blessed. Blessed. And under the protection of the Almighty. Because you see, Mr. Speaker, and if, beg your pardon, Mr. Speaker, and allow me a brief departure from the Queen's English. I could not believe that despite the magi I saw going on under the pretext of good governance, that our economy could actually grow whilst others retracted. But Mr. Speaker, to my absolute horror, this declaration, like a few others made by the same honorable member, Mr. Speaker, a flagrant breach of the ninth commandment of our Lord and Savior. Mr. Speaker, you know, I echo the sentiments of the Honorable Member for Groseley, who referred to statistics. And you know, statistics in fact, when properly computed, don't lie. But the people presenting them can. You see, Mr. Speaker, the pronouncement, and we have to take our pronouncement in this Honorable House very seriously, because there are these pronouncements that are used as a yardstick to determine the extent to which we can borrow as a means of financing capital and other projects. It is these pronouncements which at times, Mr. Speaker, are used by those who wish to invest in the very bonds that we place in the public domain as a means of raising finance. So what we say must be said responsibly and accurately. On the issue of deception, Mr. Speaker, you know, deception that is practiced by some of the less than honest amongst us, one of them is the topic of VAT. You know, Mr. Speaker, I'm almost tempted, you know, knowing that you were a former sitting judge at times, to ask you to issue a Lucas direction in the House. A Lucas direction, I mean, for those who, some who had been in court, and for those who may be on their way to court, should probably know that a Lucas direction is such that when a judge finds a witness to be incapable of telling the truth, a mutter, or someone who lies, he can then advise the jury that if they believe him to be someone incapable of telling the truth, that they can disregard every single thing you say. So, at times I wonder if such a direction may be warranted so that the public knows how to treat the statements of persons whose variations of the truth are a source of concern and can be the source of public contempt and ridicule. You see, maybe a simple word of advice, Mr. Speaker, should be, you know, if you don't know what you're talking about in this house, if you doubt the accuracy of what your speech writers or those you are too afraid to challenge for whatever the reason may be, maybe it's your job you're protesting or something like that, whatever they tell you to say, quiet. Or better yet, if you wish to save yourself from the public embarrassment and ridicule that public records provide, for God's sake, quiet. Speak about things that you know about. Speak about things that are truthful and accurate and endure to the benefit of the people of this country. That's what we are here to do. See, Mr. Speaker, my entry into political life has exposed me to certain hypocrisies. Sometime last year, Mr. Speaker, before on or about the 5th day of December, our esteemed Prime Minister and Minister of Finance declared his cabinet of ministers and honored me with the responsibility, the Ministries of Tourism, Heritage and Creative Industries. Immediately, the pundits of doom and gloom were quick to claim that his decision was flawed, as I had no expertise in tourism. However, the hypocrisy is this, that from these very same pundits, Mr. Speaker, there was a deafening silence when the member for Castries North assumed the responsibility for the Ministries of Finance and others. Mr. Speaker, I wish to publicly thank the Prime Minister for the trust vested in me and assure both he and this nation that whilst I, now the Honorable Lawn Theophilus, am not the perfect and mistake-free guru of EC Express fame and tourism that my predecessor was heralded to be, that I am a hard worker who is willing to listen and learn and who will perform my job to the best of my ability with honesty and integrity and for the betterment of the people of this country. Mr. Speaker, my job as a minister is to be a policy director, not a micromanager for the ministries and the well-placed experts within them, as my predecessor was, and which the facts, Mr. Speaker, will clearly show as a recipe for disaster. I'm echoing words I'm hearing in here. Recipe for disaster. I embrace it too. Recipe for disaster. And Mr. Speaker, I intend to really go there, but since the opposition has now opened up the floodgates by accusing the Minister of Finance of wastage during his previous tenure, let me take a moment, Mr. Speaker, to examine two examples of wastage. And I'll examine it because it's a policy of this government, clearly reflected in the blueprint for growth, that we will not be wasting government resources. You know, two examples of wastage. Trust upon the people. And since I'm dealing with policy, I will deal with those that touch and concern the ministries under my charge. And what better examples of wastage can there be than we delve into the not too far history of the Ministry of Tourism and the Tourist Board? My predecessor, Mr. Speaker, with reckless abandon, aided and abetted, and we all know what aided and abetted means. The Honorable Member from Meeko South has an LLB. He probably can explain to those who don't know what aided and abetted means. Aided and abetted by his colleagues. Squandered the resources of this country, Mr. Speaker. and they ask the question as to how this nation is plummeted into debt. How? Easy. Mr. Speaker, there's a sad thing about history and the pages of time, because it accurately reflects facts even though we try to distort them. You see, the tourist board, Mr. Speaker, our record is revealed. Mr. Speaker, the people of this nation were forced into a revenue guarantee with American Airlines. They tell me all kinds of things about them saying that they didn't want to fly. I didn't want them to fly. I don't care. We keep strong alliances with them. But it is the nature of the arrangement that you enter into. And when you enter into an arrangement of that nature, contrary to the advice of your board and your experts, and within less than a year, it plummets this nation into debt of $7,259,747 in less than 1 year, Mr. Speaker. We have to pay that money. The people of this country have to do that. And they talk about wastage, reckless abandon, and use of public resources. Mr. Speaker, the very board, my predecessor, I had the services of his bourgeois, the legendary Mr. Heppel. In two years, cost this nation over $900,000 in salary alone, Mr. Speaker. $900,000 in salary alone. Not a bird chirped when that happened, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can go further. I am reliably informed. I ain't going on the phone bill yet. I'll leave that for now, for a while. I'm reliably informed, Mr. Speaker. A justification given my predecessor for hosting Boxing in Paradise was that the Mexicans would come. The dream of the Mexicans coming to St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, came at a whopping $3,470,013, all to be paid by the people of this country. You know, Mr. Speaker, in fact, I'm reliably informed that there are more members seated on the opposition side of the political divide than Mexicans who bolted to St. Lucia since the hosting of Boxing in Paradise. After $3,470,013. Mr. Speaker, as if Boxing in Paradise wasn't enough. In the same year, rather than invest in the Creole festivities associated with our own culture, something that's unique to the people of St. Lucia, we were forced to spend an additional $672,715 on a food and rum festival. Well, then again, Mr. Speaker, probably if my predecessor had invested in anything Creole, we would have probably been spared that hilarious pain in your basket episode that we so fondly associate with the past general election. Pain in your basket. Mr. Speaker, the following year, what did we do with the money? You know, Mr. Speaker, I sat in meetings with the Minister of Finance and the budget team, and we had to justify every cent that we were given. Every cent, Mr. Speaker. How we could utilize those funds. But when I sit back and I look at things that in another year where Caribbean Marketplace was hosted, for Mr. Speaker, $7,510,409 of taxpayers' money. The year after we hosted that, Mr. Speaker, Caribbean Marketplace, we hosted another thing, FCCA in St. Lucia, another conference. For a little bit, you know, a small amount. $3,564,127. That very year. And that very same year, Mr. Speaker, you know, That's why ministers don't micromanage. It's not your job. That very same year, after Holiness CCA, you know what we did? Thanks to the booking abilities of a star-struck minister, we landed the highest cost ever for the hosting of the jazz festival. A little $7,969,454. Charged every cent, Mr. Speaker, charged to the taxpayers, the people of this country. Some of the people who we are trying to help through the initiatives that this government is imposing, engaging in. Step, they want to smile at Step. Smile? How can you smile when you see what has happened with the resources of this country before? Persons think thereafter they have the moral fortitude to stand before this honorable house and accuse our esteemed Minister of Finance of wasting. Mr. Speaker, it's a pity the member for Mykonos had stepped out. You know, I showed her a little push, a little thing, looking like some pitons. You see, Mr. Speaker, as if we didn't spend enough money, a decision was taken to rebrand St. Lucia. We moved away from a tagline that we had embraced, something we had invested considerable resources in, called something simply beautiful. A tagline that shows how beautiful our country is in all respects, Mr. Speaker. And we moved from simply beautiful to swoosh, swoosh, two little swooshes. You know what those swooshes cost us? Live the legend. For $300,000. $300,000, Mr. Speaker. You know, you might be thinking, Mr. Speaker, you know, and when I said live the legend, it's true. The tagline, live the legend. Live the legend? Live the legend? What legend? Legend. You know, Mr. Speaker, I did a rough tabulation of just some of those, excluding the phone bill, excluding the travel bill, the $1 million travel bill, excluding that. And you know, over a period of 4 years, Mr. Speaker, between the years 2008 and 2011, my predecessor, through some largesse, cost the taxpayers of this country $51,477,617. And if a boy only asked, look at the records of the tourist board here, you know? And they accused our Minister of Finance of wastage. Mr. Speaker, can you believe it? At no stage did any member of the now opposition attempt to salvage this country from this nightmare, Mr. Speaker. Yet today, they are barefaced enough, to class the sound initiatives of this good government as wastage. Mr. Speaker, after I quoted these things to you, Mr. Speaker, I mean, it ought to be a policy in any event that government indicated not waste government resources. But having gone through this, it's little wonder that a policy clearly stated in our blueprint for growth is that there must be no wastage of the budget of the St. Lucia Tourist Board. And we will ensure that this happens, Mr. Speaker, and we have a sound board in place under the chairmanship of Mr. Matthew Bobrea, who would never let that happen. Never. Mr. Speaker, on assuming the charge of this ministry, Mr. Speaker, I was reliably informed, and I say through truthful statistics, that there was a contraction of the tourism sector in 2011. There was a decline, Mr. Speaker, in total visitor arrivals by 3.9%, or a number of 976,216 visitors. Stayover arrivals declined by 0.4%, or 304,639 visitors. Cruise arrivals dropped, Mr. Speaker, by 6%, and there was a total decline in total visitor expenditure by 7.4%, 2011. But, Mr. Speaker, despite the downward movement of these figures, and after considering, you know, that the harsh economic realities that currently exist, this government understands and appreciates the significant contribution that the tourism sector can make to the economic activity of this island. And I wish to take this time, Mr. Speaker, to recognize the efforts of the hard-working staff of the Ministry of Tourism, Heritage and Creative Industries. And I also wish to recognize the staff of the St. Lucia Tourist Board, who at this time, Mr. Speaker, are toiling beyond the call of duty, as they do year after year, to successfully produce the Jazz Festival. I also wish, Mr. Speaker, to recognize and acknowledge our marketing team and partners that are located overseas. Mr. Speaker, my staff are energized by the sound policies of this government and are determined to prove that their competent efforts and sound technical advice, which is finally being listened to, can reverse figures of decline that we witnessed in 2011. Mr. Speaker, whilst we criticize the callous decisions made by my predecessor on the issue of airlift, this government, Mr. Speaker, is aware of the importance of securing airlift and connectivity to our island. As without this, we will not be able to achieve the overall objective of increasing stayover arrivals in the island. In this vein, during this financial year, efforts will be placed on expanding airlift from existing gateways, as well as exploring new and emerging ones, such as Panama and Brazil, amongst others. The Canadian market, Mr. Speaker, is of significance to us, as this market has displayed steady growth over the past 3 years. Canada has seemingly weathered the global financial and economic crisis better than most other developed countries, a fact that is reflected in the strength of the Canadian dollar on the world market. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, a new approach is being taken with respect to this market. The French market, Mr. Speaker, while small for the time being in terms of total numbers, has also shown growth. France, again, has been one of the European countries that have fared better than most in the face of economic recession. By ensuring, Mr. Speaker, that St. Lucia has a dedicated presence in this market, and by facilitating airlift to St. Lucia via Martinique, St. Lucia has begun to reap the benefits of this strategy, which is reflected in the increase in visitor arrivals by over 20%. Mr. Speaker, arrivals from our core market of the United States will be greatly enhanced by daily flights out of JFK this year, and the increases in airlift that we are currently pursuing out of the northeastern corridor of the United States. While pursuing all of this, Mr. Speaker, we remain steadfast in our support of airlines and initiatives aimed at reducing the cost of regional travel, as the Caribbean is our island's third major source market. But, Mr. Speaker, our quest to pursue airlift aggressively cannot be done in isolation of initiatives that render our destination more costly and, by extension, less attractive to the world market, amongst others. Ironically, Mr. Speaker, whilst we joined our sister territories in protest and condemnation of the airport duty imposed on travelers by the United Kingdom on the basis that it was unreasonable, and because it had the harmful effect of increasing the cost associated with getting to St. Lucia, we, under the watchful eye of the former government, imposed a similar duty by way of an airport development tax, charged on every ticket, which had the same effect as the APD, and compounded the cost implications to visitor arrivals out of or connecting through the United Kingdom at a time when we weren't even close to laying one brick at Uanora. You must think, Mr. Speaker, you complain about APD, you're not ready to build the airport, you impose a tax, and you complain One of the biggest complaints is the cost of getting to this destination. Brilliant, Mr. Speaker. Brilliant. Brilliant. It smacks of guru logic, if you ask me. Legendary guru logic. Thank you. Thankfully, Mr. Speaker, these less than well-trained touristic minds and these feeble minds on this side of the political divide have agreed with our hoteliers and travel partners who view the tax as being more oppressive than beneficial at this time. And as such, we agree fully with the decision taken, and you heard the pronouncement by the Honorable Minister of Finance, that the tax will be suspended until such time as we can review its merits in light of a comprehensive review of the physical and financial plans concerning the airport. While this is being done, this government through the Ministry of Infrastructure will commission the consultancies associated with the development of the road network, which is aimed at narrowing the time window between Castries and Beaufort for the pleasure and benefit of all tourists and our people alike. Mr. Speaker, this government feels that we will focus on the fact that our destination is unique in history, unique in culture, creative talent, and natural beauty. We must maximize the benefits that can be derived from capitalizing on the development or, in other cases, enhancement of these unique qualities that we possess. This will significantly improve our product, a product that will differentiate us from our competitors and thus enable us to promote our island in a distinct way to the wider world. Mr. Speaker, more tourist arrivals equate to more jobs for our people. Another aspect of the enhancement of our product, Mr. Speaker, is the plan of this government to strengthen the linkage between tourism and the rest of the economy to areas where the direct impact of tourism may have been neither felt nor experienced. We plan on doing this, Mr. Speaker, through an initiative called Village Tourism. By virtue of this initiative, we will widen the expanse of tourism benefits to the rural communities. By doing this, we will not only create employment in keeping with the objectives of this government, but will make St. Lucia one of the most diverse and sustainable destinations around. The process, Mr. Speaker, entails developing community-based events, sites and attractions around the island, similar to what was mentioned by the member for Denry South. We will specifically brand these attractions for both marketing and historical purposes and develop themes that are consistent with their natural and cultural heritage. The net result, Mr. Speaker, will be the enhancement of our attractiveness and viability as a port of call for the cruise industry, which thrives on products such as this. Mr. Speaker, our esteemed Minister of Finance has outlined some of the policy adjustments which will be a feature of this financial year and which will ensure the growth and longevity of the tourism sector. As we market ourselves regionally and internationally as a means of maintaining our reputation in these fairs, it is of paramount importance that we enforce, achieve, and maintain true acceptable standards in all tourism sectors. To achieve this, we will modernize the legislative framework which governs the sector so as to strengthen its regulatory elements while simultaneously ensuring that the licensing regimes developed will police the adherence of participants in the sector to providing the services that they are licensed and approved to perform. Performance, Mr. Speaker, will be the basis for any further benefits from the incentive regimes that exist for the benefit of the sector. The Minister of Finance, Mr. Speaker, also touched on the intention of this government to commence the process to create the institutional framework that will guide the development of a high-growth segment of the tourism industry. I recognize one such segment as being the yachting sector, which in my personal and informed opinion is a sector that is pregnant with economic activity, opportunities. To capitalize on the benefits that can be derived from this sector and deal with the anticipated increases in yachting arrivals, this government, Mr. Speaker, will streamline the immigration and customs procedures so as to facilitate the easier clearance and movement of yachtsmen. Mr. Speaker, there are immeasurable avenues for the generation of revenue through the registration of yachts. Noting this, the Ministry of Tourism is currently pursuing the development of a yacht registry, which should very soon yield the first registration of a yacht in St. Lucia. But Mr. Speaker, with this registry and the movement of mega yachts to our shores comes the need for the enhancement to our infrastructure for not merely berthing, but for the provision of the ancillary services associated with the maintenance of the yachting sector. Once again, Mr. Speaker, we see the overriding objective of the creation of jobs being met with avenues for the creation of both diverse and novel modes of employment. Mr. Speaker, we believe that whilst we pursue and stimulate investment into our country, that we must nurture the investments that currently exist. The investments of those entrepreneurs who took the risk associated with the development of the tourist product in this country will not go unnoticed by this government. As such, our existing industry partners should be elated with the announcement from the Minister for Finance that the amendments to the Tourism Incentives Act will enable the incentive regime to begin anew, as if they had just commenced their business in our beautiful island. This will bring tremendous ease in the expansion that many of the hoteliers are pursuing or contemplating at this time. And those who wish to render their properties more energy efficient as a means of reducing their operating costs. Another welcome announcement to our hoteliers, Mr. Speaker, is the announcement by the Minister of Finance of the relief measures for the benefit of those hotels indebted to the government for hotel accommodation tax, or HAT. This, coupled with the reduced implementation figure of 8% for VAT, which replaces the HAT, should have this sector shouting from the mountaintop, "Finally, finally, there's a government that is sensitive to their needs. Finally, a government, thinking government, operating in the interest of the hotel sector, has returned to office." Mr. Speaker, imagine, I've spoken at length about tourism, and this is the person who, according to all the pundits, knows nothing about the sector. However, the fact that I have spoken at such length about the very subject of tourism in no way diminishes the significance of the other ministries, heritage and creative industries, Mr. Speaker, which are under my charge. Whilst it can be reasonably argued, Mr. Speaker, that the traditional role of government in culture is primarily about the preservation of patrimony, conservation of cultural assets, the development of an indigenous aesthetic, and the pursuit of art for its own sake as an expression and exploration of the national psyche. This government intends, through the new creative ministry, to marry this role with the purpose of facilitating the development and enhancement of investment, employment, output, trade, and other related transactions of an essentially commercial nature. Through the creative industry sector, simply put, Mr. Speaker, we will create a new breed of entrepreneurs, Mr. Speaker, the pages of our blueprint for growth reflect that prior to this assumption of government, that this administration had signaled its intention to focus on and invest in some lucrative creative industry sector as a catalyst for job creation and as a new economic platform, which, along with other sectors, would contribute to accelerated growth within this economy. To facilitate the growth of the creative industry sector, a new department will be established, which will commence with an initial staff complement of two, they being a director and a creative officer, which will guide and coordinate the development of this sector. During this financial year, we propose to achieve the following things, amongst others. Mr. Speaker, we will develop a full work program for the sector after having detailed consultations with the various stakeholders and in keeping with the consultancy that will be embarked upon as provided for in the estimates of expenditure. We realize, Mr. Speaker, that this sector, the unbridled manner that this sector has allowed to develop in, is just one of the factors that may have impeded its growth. One of the aims of this ministry is to provide a framework for the granting of fiscal and other incentives which will stimulate this sector. As such, Mr. Speaker, a proper legislative framework will have to be passed to establish and guide the body corporate with the mandate to develop this sector and create a regulatory framework which will be the basis for the granting of incentives based on a defined policy and criteria to bona fide artists, technicians, videographers, and more, Mr. Speaker. And it also provides a basis to facilitate the monitoring of these incentives. And, Mr. Speaker, we also need to monitor the direction of the beneficiaries of these very incentives for the purpose of economic impact assessment. At a later stage, Mr. Speaker, we will more than likely pursue the consideration of a basket of goods to which incentives will apply at the appropriate time. Mr. Speaker, I have listened ad nauseum at times, to sentiments echoed by some of my colleagues on the opposite side of the political divide. And Mr. Speaker, anyone who advances the notion that a government after a mere 5 months in office can achieve all that is laid out in its manifesto, or that this government is responsible for the debt scenario that is referred to in this budget, is intellectually dishonest and deserving of public indictment and contempt. In fact, Mr. Speaker, let me take intellectual out of this. It's dishonest, downright dishonest, and deserving of public indictment and contempt. As this government executes its plans, Mr. Speaker, to bring better days to the people of this country, we must first break free from some of the shackles that bind us, owing only to the ineptitude of our opposition colleagues whilst in government. We urge our people to be patient. In keeping with the adage, and this is a good adage, I've heard some interesting quotations from some of the members of the other side, but in keeping with the adage that Rome was not built in a day, and similarly, better days will not come in one day, but by the grace of God and the guidance of this sound government, these better days will unfold day by day. Mr. Speaker, before I close, I needed to apologize, Mr. Speaker, for this morning misconstruing the times that this House was supposed to begin its deliberation. I was, as usual, early, but squandered 15 minutes thinking that I was an hour early. And I apologize. And what this it reflects also is that honorable members must listen to what goes on within this house. It's a clear reflection. Must listen accurately so that we can respond appropriately. So I, too, am in need of therapy where that is concerned. And I ask you, Mr. Speaker, to forgive me for my late arrival this morning. Mr. Speaker, this having been said, I want to thank you for your patient hearing during my contribution to this debate, Mr. Speaker. I thank you.
Thank you.